And good morning. Hi. Welcome to another special edition of Health Essentials. Okay, it may not be special. It's just another one. But it's an opportunity to do something that maybe you don't get this information anywhere else. Maybe I'm giving you information that you like to hear. I think this program has potential to help those that want to help themselves. Obviously, there's people that have zero desire to do anything other than live their life exactly the way they want. They're going to eat what they want. They're going to smoke what they want. They're going to drink what they want. But this is not for that. And so I don't need to spend any time telling somebody that their behavior is wrong. I'd rather just focus on the people that want to do something to help themselves. Doesn't that make sense? There's one current theory of aging. It's called the telomere theory. And telomeres are the little end pieces of our chromosomes that gradually shorten as we age. And so scientists believe that as these telomeres shrink, that once they're gone, there's no more chance to reproduce cells, therefore you die. Well, I came across this article from Frederick Saldman, M.D., and his book is called You Are Your Own Best Medicine, and this comes from page 115, Healing Arts Press, Inner Traditions, 2016. And he goes on to quote that recent research indicates that happiness is a guarantee of longevity with good health because, and the punchline is, happy people have longer telomeres. Now, that's just one idea. I have read before that if a person is deficient in magnesium, oh boy, the telomeres shorten much more quickly. But I'm not completely convinced that that's really what the name of the game is. In each and every cell, you have a structure called a mitochondria. Some tissues or organs, they have more mitochondria than others, and this is where all energy production takes place. It's like the little factory or the engines that make everything work. So you're only going to be as healthy and strong as the mitochondria that you have inside of your cells. So, for example, the heart. Incredible amounts of mitochondria. Muscles. Incredible amounts of mitochondria. Red blood cells? I don't think they contain mitochondria. So they're dependent on, I think they have some, just not the amount that heart and muscles do. I can tell you right now, if all you focused on today was feeding and nourishing your mitochondria, you're going to be in better shape, kiddo. You just are. This program today is called Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. And why don't we spend just a few moments talking about some ideas about how to improve your health. Now, since the mitochondria is just total energy production for you, how about we actually start feeding it? There's two basic things that you've got to have to make energy in the mitochondria. You've got to have fuel, and you've got to have oxygen. It's just like a combustion engine from the car. If you take a potato and shove it in the tailpipe, and the engine can't breathe, well, you can't expect the car to go up the hill at Mount Selman at a good clip. No. It's probably going to bog down and stall out. Or if you have a lawnmower and it's full of, and the air filter is full of as much dust and dirt as possible, and maybe there's some oil that spilled in it because you loaned your lawnmower to your neighbor and your neighbor decided to store the lawnmower and turn it sideways. That's never happened to me before. And then you wonder why your lawnmower won't start, and you go, oh, it's because it can't breathe. Well, it takes oxygen to do that. I mean, wouldn't that be one of the simple reasons why you've got to be able to either breathe deeply? Sometimes a person looks at a lab test that a doctor could run, or a nurse practitioner, or a PA, or who knows, maybe even anybody can order a lab test now, for all I know. And you come back and there's one marker that's elevated, CO2. Carbon dioxide or bicarbonate. Well, you can't have great oxygen in your blood and in your muscles and in your brain when you have CO2 that's high. And sometimes people get so stressed they just hold their breath. I watched, this was some time ago, but I watched two police officers and two gentlemen fighting, and I was really not in a position where I felt like it was a good idea for me to go and render aid and help. I just figured I would just observe, since the two perpetrators didn't have guns or knives or bats. It was just mano a mano, hand-to-hand combat between the two police officers and the two gentlemen, as I will refer to them as. Hey, but I can tell you what, one police officer forgot to breathe because he was pretty much gassed in about 10 seconds. And it's easy to catch yourself not breathing sometimes. That's one of the beauties of exercise, is it kind of forces you to breathe. You've got to have oxygen. I always wondered, when I was reading some cancer research the other day, what they did was they compared hyperbaric oxygen upon mice that were injected with very aggressive forms of liver cancer. And this is a form of a liver cancer that's designed to overtake the mouse's body relatively quickly, so they succumb to the cancer and they die. But guess what happened when they put the mice in hyperbaric oxygen? The mice doesn't know they're in hyperbaric oxygen. They're not like intelligent like a human being. Sure, they're a mammal, but they're not cognizant of what's going on, I don't think, anyway. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But when they put mice in cages with hyperbaric oxygen, meaning they're trying to increase the oxygen saturation of the cells or the mouse's or the mice's cellular tissues, well, guess what? They did far better than chemotherapy could ever do. And that's why I find this so bizarre, that if cancer cells just naturally do not like high levels of oxygen, well, shouldn't they be building hyperbaric oxygen treatment centers? Or is that just not cost-effective enough? Is there not enough profit from oxygen? I don't know. Can you patent it? No, it's oxygen. Can you patent water? No. If they could, they would have done that already, and we'd be charged a premium from every drop of water we consumed. But yeah, it's astounding what happens when you start breathing. So let me just encourage you, if you already know the writing is on the wall, and I can tell you from looking at lots of research and studies on this topic, men as they age, the more physically strong, if they can maintain their strength, if they can improve their physical strength, that usually bodes really, really well. How about women? Do women do well as they age if they become physically weak? No. In order to get your strength back or to become stronger than what you currently are, that's going to require some activity on your part. And that could be called exercise and breathing. And so if you want your mitochondria to produce energy to keep you alive and to keep you free from having multiple surgeries and about 30 zillion drug prescriptions each month, you probably think I'm making that up. I look at doctor's notes all day long. I look at lab tests at every turn. There's not a day that goes by that I don't examine lab tests. And so I find it so fascinating, because I always ask the person the same question: what did your doctor say about this? What did the nurse say about it? And the answer is just the same every single time. They said everything looks great, and I'm going, well, why are there 10 values that are high and 6 values that are low? What does that mean? They go, yeah, that's what I thought. And you know, most of the people that come in, sometimes they'll even have a separate sheet of paper where they'll just make a notation. And I think this is kind of smart on their part, where they actually write down everything that's on their lab test that was just done, whether that was a month ago or 3 months ago or the day before. But they'll write down everything that was high and everything that was low, and they're questioning, why did my doctor say that everything was normal when everything is not normal? Well, that's a story that I get. But I'm telling you, if you have lab tests and there's something that's elevated or there's something that's much lower than what the normal range is, don't you think that we can learn something from that? So what if your CO2 levels are high? What does that tell you? Well, it might tell you that you just don't have enough oxygen. You really can't have it both ways. You can't have high CO2 and great oxygen at the same time. Anyway, So the research that I was looking at this morning was showing that happiness is a predictor of how well we preserve our genetic code to keep it from burning out and shortening. So you want to have a long life, be happy. Well, what does happiness do? It kind of helps your body relax. What if you went to bed at night and you were completely happy with your husband? Wouldn't that bode well for a good night's rest, as opposed to dealing with some contentious arguments right before you go to bed? Yeah, bad. All right, if you want to join me on the radio this morning, the number is 903-586-5257, and I'd be happy to accept a phone call, especially if you have a question about health. That's what we need to focus on today. Now, nobody calls. I'm going to share this with you right here. And if I covered this before, let me cover this one more time, because this is so simple and so to the point. But let me go to the phone lines first. Good morning. Oh, did you catch that? I sort of missed that. All right, sorry about that. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I'm ready to go in case you want to call in with a question. If not, this comes from Frank Schellenberger, MD. Here we go. We'll try it again. All right, did I catch you this time?
Yes.
Yay, good. All right. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm calling about my husband, who is 78 years old. His blood pressure goes real high, and then it goes real low.
When?
It doesn't matter. During the day, his blood pressure goes down about noontime to about 85 over 56 or 95 over 40. And then as the day goes on, the blood pressure goes back up.
Back up to what?
190 over... whatever, you know, and then 221 over something last night. And we can't figure out what's going on. I mean, every doctor we've seen, he hasn't got sleep apnea. He doesn't have a renal blockage. We have no idea what's going on.
Okay, what medications is he on?
Well, he takes Lomax, he takes high blood pressure medicine.
Well, can I give you just one idea? And I'm not saying this is right, but what if the medications, does he take his medications starting in the morning?
No, at night.
At nighttime? Does his blood pressure tend to go up at night or go down by morning time?
It goes up.
I always think that if blood pressure goes up during the night, that's a problem with an excess production of adrenaline while you're sleeping. And so he's not diabetic, is he?
No.
Okay. Does he have any other problems besides high blood pressure and prostate problems?
No. He had open heart surgery, but he did not have a heart attack or anything. He had two blocked arteries that they put stents in.
Is he taking any statin drugs right now to lower cholesterol?
He was, but he's not now.
Okay. Is he taking aspirin at all?
Yes.
Okay. Every time you take aspirin, you're going to leak blood. I'm not saying that's the answer to what's going on right now. All I know is I'm dealing with, if his blood pressure is 85 over 40 or 90 over 40 or whatever numbers you told me, then that shoots up later in the day, then there's got to be some regulatory dysfunction within a glandular system called the adrenal glands. And I may not do a good job of explaining this, but here's what happens. Your adrenal glands have the primary responsibility for keeping your blood pressure from dropping below a certain point. They also have a responsibility in keeping your blood sugar from dropping too low. So if you're able to stay awake all day long and not totally black out for 3 or 4 hours, your adrenal glands have just a little bit to do with all that. So if his blood pressure is dropping during the day but it goes up later in the day, then we probably have a most inappropriate surge of either cortisol or adrenaline later in the day, and that's just driving the pressure up. And so a lot of the blood pressure drugs that are used to kind of combat that, they're called beta blockers. You ever heard of a beta blocker?
Yes.
Is that what he's taking?
Yes.
Okay, well, a beta blocker, probably the longer name of it, it's called a beta adrenergic receptor blocker, and the word adrenergic just refers to the adrenal glands or adrenaline. You probably just haven't heard that. I'm just being too wordy here. And so what they're doing is they're giving him a drug to block how adrenaline attaches to the lining of the arteries. And so it may be that we just need to feed and nourish and heal the adrenal glands so they can come back to life. Now, in saying that, this week I was reading a story about Indians, a tribe of Indians. It's not mm-hmm. important that you, you know, that I tell you the whole story, but they were saying, what's the difference between the Indian tribe that stays extremely healthy back in 1640 versus the European explorers and European settlers that are that you know can't stay healthy to save their lives? And they were saying that, for example, when the Indian tribe would kill a buffalo or a deer or an elk or a moose, the very first thing they would do is they would remove the adrenal glands from the animal. And they, if there were 60 members of the tribe, they would always make sure that they took their knives or however they did it, and they would cut it 60 ways. And each member of the tribe would get a small piece of the adrenal gland. And this was almost the most valuable part of the animal that they could eat. And then the next thing they would eat is called the spleen. I'm sure this is the most delicious conversation of all time, first thing of a Saturday morning. But they would eat these things, but what it would do is it would keep them in great, great working order. And I think we've kind of lost our way on that. And so a lot of times when people have these adrenal... Now, it is very common as people age for adrenaline levels just to progressively shoot up higher and higher and higher. And the other way that I could play this is your husband has got to have the optimal level of zinc and potassium and magnesium and vitamin C and B vitamins if his body's going to be able to manage itself. If he doesn't have those things, then he can start to lose his ability to manage adrenaline over time. Unless there's more to the story than what you're telling me. Does he tend to... I mean, there's got to be a long history here. Is he just the calmest, most chilled out person of all time?
Pretty much. But he, like I said, he's never really had any issues other than when he had the open heart surgery 2 years ago.
Well, even if he has, I can tell you the number one predictor that's going to tell me if plaque is going to form in those heart arteries is yeah. going to be insulin levels. So if I just refer back to the study from the Southwestern Medical School in Dallas, Fort Worth area, when somebody donates their arteries or their body to science, they can keep them alive in a test tube. So once somebody succumbs to life or they give up their last breath, they can remove the arteries and they can keep them alive in a test tube for like years. But when they inject insulin into that mix, so any time that insulin goes up, that takes adrenaline right up with it. So I don't know what your husband's eating, but I could guess it's things that trigger this high production of insulin. And so what we got to do is we got to find some reasonable way to help burn off the excess adrenaline. Does he exercise at all?
He walks on a treadmill.
Does he eat a pretty good diet?
Fair.
Well, if it's fair and it's just enough to trigger more production of insulin, that may be throwing his adrenaline levels through the roof. Now, if you want to, you can do whatever you like. You can go to the doctor and say, can we check him throughout the day, like for 24 hours straight, and see if he's having any inappropriate surges of adrenaline? Because what that may do is that may lead the doctor to going, okay, I couldn't solve this before, but now I understand. And so let me just say it this way. When his blood pressure is at its highest, tell me one more time what the numbers are when it's at its very highest.
It can be, like last night, it was 221 over 140, I think he said.
Okay, so let me round it off to 220 over 40, or over 140, okay?
Okay.
So what your husband has, he has what's called a very wide pulse pressure gap. That's going to be the difference between the systolic and the diastolic, and so that's 80 points difference, right?
Yes.
Anything over 45 is too much adrenaline. So the mystery has been solved. It's just a matter of what do we do to find a way to get his body to heal and repair itself. And so...
So the medical doctors say, we don't know what to do, we throw our hands up,
I'm telling you the precise solution. He's having an inappropriate surge of adrenaline at the wrong time, and that's causing his blood pressure to shoot up. And they're on the right track, they're just not going about it the right way. They're trying to give him beta blockers, and all that does is blocks adrenaline. Wow. See, the drugs they're giving him are blocking adrenaline. You can read everything that you want about him, you'll find out that I'm probably correct on this issue. So, yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. It's frustrating, isn't it?
Extremely.
Well, what do you think about doctors of 50 years ago where they really tried to understand a person and try to get problems fixed? Do you feel like they do that now, or do you feel like it's more just to try another medication, see what happens?
Try another medication.
That's frustrating to me.
Yes, very.
And so here's the things that we can do. I would just naturally assume he's not getting enough magnesium to meet his needs.
Okay.
Do you happen to have a copy of his lab work in front of you?
Or
I'll tell you what to look for. Okay. What I want to just write this down with a pencil and a piece of paper.
Okay.
There is a enzyme on his lab work called ALKPHOS, ALKPHOS, or sometimes it's just ALP for short. That's called alkaline phosphatase. If that number is below 60, I think he's got a very significant zinc deficiency. It's just nearly impossible to ever get the heart to work right when you have an alkaline phosphatase below 60. It just ain't going to happen. And zinc, I don't want to make zinc into a panacea or a be-all, do-all, everything mineral, but if he has a lack of zinc, it's going to be very hard for his body to manage proper adrenal function that just gets out of control.
So is the zinc just something you go and buy at the drugstore?
Well, I'd probably choose a health food store.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I really want to recommend? Have your husband go buy a moose gun, go to Alaska. Oh, how come you're laughing at me? I'm giving you a great piece of advice here, ma'am.
I'm sorry, that's not happening.
Ma'am, if you want your marriage to last 47 more years, you're going to do... Well, yeah, you're looking at taking a zinc supplement. That would be one of them. The other thing is you just got to consider whole food vitamin C. This could be such a game changer for your husband, because when you put whole food vitamin C, I'm just talking about vitamin C that comes from either plants or fruit. So it's not rocket science. Just look on the label. If it says ascorbic acid, that's not whole food vitamin C. That's just made from high fructose corn syrup. But if it says vitamin C, then its source comes from like oranges or from like acerola cherries or a herb or a plant called camu camu or cherries or something like that, then you know it's real. But you've got to have vitamin C to prevent adrenaline from building up. So I'm kind of okay with the idea. I tell you what you do. You go write this down also. When you look at his cholesterol profile, there is one particular form of cholesterol that's commonly done. It's called VLDL. That stands for very low density lipoprotein. If that's above 20, then I would say he's got a pretty severe vitamin C deficiency.
Okay.
But you can't kick out, or you can't regulate or manage adrenaline throughout the day when you're low in vitamin C. It just can't be done. The adrenal glands do not work properly. That's one of the reasons why the Indians were so healthy, is because they ate adrenal tissue regularly, which is another clue I've given you.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your information.
You're welcome. I hope that helps. Let me know how it works out.
I certainly will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. If you want to join me on the radio this morning, 903-586-5257. Let me just state that one more time. If you measure blood pressure readings and the blood pressure has an 80-point difference, like the woman just called on behalf of her husband, that's always part and parcel to there's just too much stress hormone circulating through the blood or the body. And so I know this is a low-tech approach. Let me give you another thing that you can do. This is just a home test. If you take a flashlight, it doesn't have to be a very bright one. It can be just a very gentle one. If you put a person in a dark room and you shine the flashlight at a 45-degree angle, if you watch the pupils contract against the light and they can hold it for 20 seconds, adrenals are in good shape. But if it starts to pulsate in a second, they're shot. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you today?
I am great. How are you, sir?
Truly blessed. Dr. Morgan, I hope to go in about 3 weeks on a medical mission to El Salvador.
Excellent.
And and I want to prepare myself physically for that. I think I'm in good health. I have a lot of my allergies cause my eyes to water, but in that, other than about 15 extra pounds, I think it's my problems that I have. But I want to prepare myself for that environment. I don't know if they have any type of fungus or anything else down there.
I would assume they have everything down there.
I mean, harmful things. You know,
you're going to be covered up with harmful stuff.
Okay.
So here's how you counter that. I mean, if somebody walks up to you from the jungle village and says, "Here's our holy water from our well we've had for 200 years, please drink it," I would I would pass on that, because it may be filled with amoebas and protozoas and all manner of bacteria, fungus, and viruses that could wreck you. And that 15 pounds, that could be gone in about 2 days, but it's called dysentery or diarrhea or projectile vomiting. You don't need to lose the weight that way. So here's some of the simple things. Are you worried about mosquitoes at all?
Yes.
Okay, there's an herb called sarsaparilla. You know how these we have sassafras trees everywhere, or maybe the original soft drink was a sarsaparilla? Sometimes
yes,
they're called sarsaparilla, S-A-R-S, parilla, sarsaparilla. That is one of the greatest herbal remedies of all time to take if you're going to go into a jungle or a humid location where there's mosquitoes. Of course, that could be Dallas or Houston this time of year. But that'll prevent you from getting malaria. That is, if you want to take my word for it. Number
right,
two,
okay.
If there was, now, I can't tell you, you know, exactly what to do, but I can tell you, if there was one thing and I only had one choice besides the sarsaparilla, oh, my word, I would take probiotics. Now, there's one unique probiotic in particular that I want you to strongly consider to save yourself. Now, I've heard a bunch of stories from patients of mine that have gone to all these different countries on mission trips, and usually the ones that do these things, actually, 100% success rate. Everybody else gets sick, but they don't. That's just mysterious, they don't get sick. But there's a probiotic called Saccharomyces boulardii. Have you ever heard of that before?
I haven't, and I couldn't spell it either.
Well, just write capital S and put a little dot. That stands for Saccharomyces. And then boulardii, I think that's spelled B-O-U-L-A-R-D-I-I, probably named after a Italian microbiologist, something like that. But the Saccharomyces boulardii is going to save your life, buddy. That's going to keep you from getting Montezuma's revenge and everything else. But you better start taking that now and take it the whole time you're there.
Okay, and do you think I could find that at the Jacksonville?
Oh, absolutely.
Store?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And if they have other probiotics that involve good beneficial microbes, that would be in your very best interest to start consuming those right now. So building up to the 3 weeks, I'm not telling you how to run your life, but I would probably not eat anything called starches or grains, or even any, I probably wouldn't eat any modern fruit like mangoes and pineapples, papayas, bananas, stuff like that. I would eat berries if you're going to eat fruit, but I would just cut out all the sugar to let my body get really, really strong right before you go. And if you'll take the probiotics now and while you're there, that's probably going to help guarantee. And you got to use the wits that God gave you, right?
Amen.
I mean, if you're going to be like Gideon's men, are you going to bend over to a muddy stream of water and lap up water with both hands like a dog? No.
Not this guy.
No. No, you're going to keep one hand on your sword, right? Anyway, but Saccharomyces boulardii, that's what you want.
Okay.
That's going to save your bacon, buddy.
And berries.
Well, I was just saying, you can eat those right now, but if you did more like a, it's called a paleo diet, where you just eat meat and vegetables, that's probably, who knows, you might shed 15 pounds between now and then. And going through a detox before you go into a country that might have lots and lots of germs and debris that you've never been in contact with, well, you know, maybe your allergies are clear up by then.
I listen to you mostly on on the podcast. This is the first day that I've actually got you on the radio.
Is that a fact? Now, you said going to the health food store in Jacksonville. Does that mean you live in Jacksonville?
Just south of Rusk.
South of Rusk. Oh, you live in the nether parts of Cherokee County, right?
Yes.
Where you live in Wells?
No, just south of Rusk, okay. 2 miles south of Rusk.
Okay, gotcha. Good deal. Well, I'm glad you got in this morning. That's made my day.
Thank you, and God bless you. You also have mentioned on the podcast that I was listening to this morning, you mentioned zinc for allergies.
let me just start over and say this right here. If you were to do a literature search right now and say, what do I do when I start to get sick? Well, if you were to go to the health food store, they sell these, they look like Tootsie Rolls. They're not. But they look like long rolls, like a Tootsie Roll stick or a pack of Rolos, but they're zinc lozenges. If you just said, you know what, I'm just going to check out what Dr. Morgan's saying to see if he's correct and true, but you're going to find out real quick that when people start to come down with any type of a bug or a sickness or a cold or the flu or even allergies, if they suck on zinc lozenges, zinc is so important, so incredibly important to making sure that your immune system can react and respond properly. So, yes, because zinc plays a powerful role in helping to regulate and feed and nourish the thymus gland. And the thymus gland is absolutely the strongest, most powerful immune gland in the body. It directs everything. So when the thymus gland is not working right, it doesn't produce enough T suppressor cells or T helper cells, and thus you have allergies. So giving your thymus gland zinc can be a godsend. And as far as that goes, the recommendation that I gave the woman earlier about whole food vitamin C, those things could be a home run for you trying to prepare your body for excellence when you're in El Salvador.
Okay. One other thing. I eat a lot of eggs that I raised from a chicken here in my backyard. And with those eggs, I put in shredded cheese to make a little omelet. I don't think I'm have any problems with cheese or milk, but I haven't drank any milk in a couple months.
Right.
Do you think there's any problem with the cheese?
Well, did you notice any drop-off in allergies when you came off milk?
Not really.
Do you have a lot of mucusy, sinusy congestion?
No.
Okay, well, it may not be a problem at all. And as far as that goes, I mean, I eat tons of eggs myself. I just had my cholesterol tested. You know what it was?
Mine was good, too.
what was your number on total cholesterol?
It's been 4 years ago.
Oh, well, I just had mine done last week. It was 195. And that's purposely eating very, very high cholesterol foods all the time.
And I think mine was in that range. I think it was less than 200.
Well, I don't know of any physician that's going to look at you and say, hey, your cholesterol is 180. We got to do something about that. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I wish you the very best. It sounds like a very, very exciting mission trip.
Are you
going to a developed part of El Salvador, or are you going to maybe a part of El Salvador that's not so developed?
We're going to one of the big cities there, and then we'll go out from the city to the small rural areas.
And so you're going to go from the city to outside the city?
Yes.
Gotcha. Well, I wish you the very best.
We'll stay in the city, and we'll go out, and I'm not medical. I'll be their spiritual director.
Well, just remember, a cord of three is not easily broken.
Okay.
That means you better keep in company with others, not get off by yourself.
Amen.
Hey, take care of yourself. Thank you for your phone call.
God bless you.
God bless you. Thanks, bye. All right. This comes from Frank Schellenberger, MD. Just consider this, especially if you know someone that's diabetic or has diabetes or doesn't want diabetes. There's a thought for you right there. He goes on to say that ginger is a delicious addition to many dishes. I agree. And this powerful root may also help to reverse the early stages of diabetes. Maybe we could take note. Researchers recently reviewed the effects of pure ginger powder on a group of 88 men and women with diabetes. Okay, so far I'm liking this. Half the group took 3 grams of ginger powder daily, and the other half took a placebo. That's called not 3 grams of ginger. Nothing. After 2 months, the results were exceptional. The ginger group had a decrease in their fasting blood sugars of more than 10%. Additionally, their A1C levels, which is another measure of blood sugar levels, decreased by 10%, whereas the placebo group saw a 21% increase in both measures. Now, folks, I may not be the greatest statistician, but if the group that took ginger had their fasting blood sugars drop by more than 10%, and their hemoglobin A1C levels decreased by 10%, and the placebo group saw a 21% increase in blood sugar, fasting blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C, isn't that a 31% difference? Do I have those numbers correct? That means the group that took ginger a whole lot better than those that did not. The ginger group also, they had a statistically significant drop in insulin levels, and they had an increase in insulin sensitivity. That is a perfect combo there. That's exactly what you want. If you have blood sugar problems or diabetes, you want to have more insulin sensitivity. Yes. And you want your insulin levels to drop. If you want to have your heart arteries become filled with plaque, then all you need is high levels of insulin. It'll do it. It says here that ginger is also an effective anti-inflammatory. It's good for post-weight training, which means people take this when they heavy weight train. They're not as sore afterwards. There's some research that shows this greatly benefits migraine headaches, or if women are prone to having just very painful menstrual cycles, or historically, if you're prone to nausea. Now, I'm not saying this gets to the root of why you would have all these things, but it's a very safe, gentle alternative. If you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open. There's plenty of time left in the program. 903-586-5257. Great, I did it again. I don't know how I did that. I just pushed the button. So if you want to call again, please do. 903-586-5257. If you want to ask me a question, be tickled and happy to answer it. If nobody calls back, that hasn't happened in years to me. Good morning. Welcome to the program. That's working now.
Yes. I'm a diabetic.
Can you turn your radio down, please?
Yes, sir. Yes,
or off, rather.
I'm a diabetic. And I was wondering, I have my blood work done every 3 months. And I was hearing you talk about ginger. What about, like, ginger cookies? Is that too much sugar in a ginger cookie?
Most likely, because even if the ginger cookie doesn't have sugar, you could eat a gluten-free ginger cookie with no sugar. It's still going to make your blood sugar shoot up.
Okay.
I know that's kind of disappointing because the ginger cookie sounds better than taking a capsule of ginger, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, what is a good dessert? Because I like want to eat something sweet all the time.
Oh, well, my favorite is a glass of water.
Oh, God.
I know. How about a steak?
I don't eat meat.
How about a well, and that's probably... Do you know where the highest occurrence of diabetes is anywhere in the world? It's in India. India has 62% of all the cases of diabetes in the entire world.
India?
Yeah. Now, I don't know a lot about Hinduism, but I think they're not really big on eating cows. So usually what happens with diabetes is you have very low B vitamins, and the very best B vitamins come from animal sources every single time.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my hemoglobin A1C is 6.4, which is a little bit high, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And my mean blood glucose is 137.
Yes, ma'am.
So, is that a little... What do I do?
What is your does your doctor give you any splendid advice to reverse the diabetes and make it disappear and go away?
No, I just take Januvia.
Okay, well, I'm not telling you to look up the studies on Januvia to see what the side effects are, but you can if you want to. But you know what you could do, even if I don't convince you of anything else. When I read the article a while ago from Dr. Frank Schellenberger about the use of ginger, I mean, it was pretty factual that it caused tremendous improvement in 88 men and women when they were tested for 2 months. So that if you wanted to just make it very, very simple, you could just go to the health food store and take ginger capsules to see if you're... all your blood work looks better. But the end result is if you feel better physically, if you have more energy, if you start to gain some strength, then it's going to work.
Okay. But what would you suggest as a... I try bananas. Bananas are full of sugar. Oranges are full of sugar. Pears are full of sugar. What would you suggest as a nice... snack?
Number one, I do everything that I can to teach diabetics not to snack, because that's the number one way that you cause diabetes. The more that you snack, the more your insulin levels are secreted. What you want is you want the exact reverse of this. You want your insulin levels to come down.
Yes, sir.
And so the way to do that is by increasing your fat intake. Do you eat eggs at all?
Once in a while, yes, sir. But I was thinking they cause too much, they have too much cholesterol in them.
Well, I just said I could eat probably 20 eggs a day, and my cholesterol was 195 when it was just tested last week.
Okay. So just eat an egg and...
Well, what you have is, if you're putting food into your body that can actually help lower your blood sugar, that's going to extend the quality of your life. And so if you've got all these things that you want to accomplish and do, then... that's just the price that you pay to be healthy and strong.
Okay.
And so there's a type of a dietary regimen called a paleo diet. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever eat that way, where you're just focusing on meat and vegetables, or is it you just don't eat meat at all?
I eat some meat. I like fish and tuna, low-salt tuna.
Well, what's kind of a typical... do you eat three meals a day, or do you eat one meal a day?
I eat a lunch, a good lunch, and that's it. Then I snack during the day a little bit.
What do you like to snack on?
Butter cookies and things like... I eat a few butter cookies, and I eat a few chips.
Okay, are you pretty pleased with your health otherwise?
Yeah, I'm about 136 pounds, but I'm a little overweight. But I was just wondering what's a good snack for a diabetic.
Well, the thing of it is, the more that you snack, the worse the diabetes is going to become.
Yes.
So I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but that's just the way it is. But then again, that's what you've been taught. They tell you to snack frequently to keep your blood sugar stable, right?
Right.
If only that were correct. Yeah, that's...
Well, what about...
no, go ahead.
I'm sorry. What about yogurt that you buy at the grocery store? Well,
you know, literally, you can try anything to your heart's desire. But what you're doing is you're trying to decide, is this actually helping my situation or is it hurting me? So, yes, you can technically try yogurt, and you can see if your blood sugar improves and if your health improves. Now, I don't know how tall you are, but I'm going to guess you're 4'1". Am I close?
No, 5'4".
See there? I just missed it by a good 18 inches, didn't I? Well, if you're 5'4", here's the simple way that you would tell if what you're doing is working. Even studies show that if you drop 6 pounds, your blood sugar tremendously improves.
Yes,
so I'll take...
does.
And so you've already proved that to yourself. So if you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write down my weight this morning, and every day for the next month, I'm going to write down my weight, and I'm just going to put it to the test. I'm going to see if snacking on butter cookies and chips helps my situation or if I need to make a change. So any type of dietary regimen where you limit the amount of carbohydrates is what's going to bring healing and repair to your body.
Yes, sir.
So if you were to take a tape measure and just measure around the middle part of your thigh on the right and the left, and then the widest part at your hips, and then measure again right around your waist where the at the navel, and then around each arm. If you add all those numbers up, and then you try something a little bit different, and all of a sudden there's 7 inches that you've lost, that would be proof that you're moving in the right direction. And if all of a sudden you start having a little bit more euphoria and energy throughout the day, and you feel like the cravings are gone, that's a sign that your body is drastically improving, because the two equations you're working with is, you have what's called insulin resistance. That means your insulin levels are way, way, way too high. And growth hormone levels are too low. If we reverse that, if growth hormone levels came up, what would happen is you would produce more energy, your body would heal everything that needs to be healed, and you would just feel generally really, really good mentally and emotionally and physically. You just would. And all your friends would walk up to you and say, there's something different about you, and you're going to go, well, you know, I've lost 17 pounds in like the last month, but did you get a new haircut? No, I just feel better. So a paleo diet may be what you're looking at, but there was a study done recently, in case you're interested, where they said, what is the most effective diet to reverse diabetes? And so I kind of honed in on that, because when they use the word reverse, that kind of suggests to me the word reverse means you no longer require any Januvia to manage it. And so I was all ears, and so they tried the 10 top medical diets. And I'm just going to cut to the chase, and I'm going to tell you, every one of them failed. None of them worked. So whether it's from the American Diabetes Association, their diet is abysmal. American Heart Association, yeah, that works if you're a cardiologist and you want to make a whole bunch of money on heart casts. Yeah, does that. But the only diet that worked was the one that people came up with on their own. It's called, I'm tired of feeling this way. And what they did was they only ate 2 meals a day with no snacks.
Yeah.
And so what that looks like is, if you say, okay, the key here to lower my insulin and my blood sugar to get myself healthier is to push off breakfast as long as possible. So what they would do is they would either eat a late breakfast, or they would eat a brunch or an early lunch, and that would be like 11 or 12. And they would eat
about 12, and I'll eat pretty much what I want, other than, you know, what shouldn't be eaten.
Yes.
And I don't eat at night other than a snack here and a snack there.
Well, does your blood sugar normally get lower as the night goes on, or is it higher in the morning?
It averages about 112 when I do my blood work.
See, you're not that far off. If we could just get your blood sugar below 100 more consistently, you would see tremendous changes of healing within your body, and you would be so pleased and so tickled with yourself.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Do you exercise at all?
I walk.
Okay. If you just did one thing, if you walked for 10 to 15 minutes after every snack, that would help you immensely.
Yeah, you know, that's what my doctor said, walk. My gastro doctor said, walk 30 minutes after I eat.
Why are you going to a gastro doctor?
Because my stomach hurts a lot.
Okay, and see, that might be a curious point, because if you didn't have any wheat of any kind or any grains or any fruit, mm-hmm. you might tell me in 3 days that your stomach just ceases to hurt at all.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
I bet you like my plan, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up any more
of
your
thank
time.
You. Thanks for your call, ma'am. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. I think there's more than one way of looking at this. Some people kind of wake up in the morning and they say to themselves, is this all I have to look forward to? Is there more? Am I going to really live my life, or am I just going to kind of survive? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I have two questions. What is your recommendation for a water filter in the home? And when you travel, what is the best water to consume? If you can't get it from the house. And secondly, One time I heard you say that you needed to always wear wool socks.
Well, I'm just telling you what I like.
Oh, you were telling me what you like. Oh,
yeah, if you don't want to have toenail fungus, and if you want your feet to be in good working order, and you want to, you know, have your feet in good shape for the next 100 years, I think wool socks. It's just, that's what King David wore. I mean, he was a shepherd.
I really don't know that.
But I'm thinking that's where wool comes from. It comes from like sheep and goats, lambs. No, it's just a very natural fiber. And maybe the context was, out of all the cases I've seen of very severe neuropathy, I really believe that if somebody has very poor circulation in their feet and they have nerve damage, I really am convinced that I've seen wool socks be a tremendous aid to helping the feet as opposed to highly synthetic fibers on the feet. So that may be where I was coming from. But as for me, I like wool socks.
Do you have a recommendation for a brand?
Just whatever. Well, let me back up here. There are some forms of wool that are so rough, you can wear them, but they'll just scratch you to death. They're itchy. It's like an army blanket. You're going, okay, yeah, it keeps me warm, but I'm going to need like a cotton sheet between the wool. So usually if you look for a sock that contains what's called merino wool, and it's probably going to be about 85% merino wool and about 10% spandex and 5% latex to kind of just keep it on your foot.
Okay.
Something like that. So whatever brand you come up with, fine by me. I've tried all of them. There's a brand called Darn Tough, and I can't destroy those socks.
Yeah.
I've tried to destroy them. I should try harder, but so far I haven't been able to.
Gotcha.
Anyway, but that's one thing. Going back to your first question, and this is only one idea. I can't give you every possible idea, but there's a type of a water filter that missionaries all over the world have been using since the early 1900s. It's called a Berkey, and that's just kind of short for Bergfeld. But a Berkey water filter. Even a woman that came to see me this week, she said, "Oh, my word, Dr. Morgan, for the last 4 months, we love our water now because we've been using a Berkey water filter." But I think that they're very, very impressive. And you can even take a Berkey portable filter with you when you travel. Or if you're traveling on the road, I'm just telling you what my favorite water is. There's a very large store. Well, I shouldn't say it's large. It's just a small mom-and-pop store called Walmart. You never heard of that, have you?
Never.
Well, you might want to ask some friends if there's a Walmart where you're traveling. But where they sell water, they sell what's called, I just forgot the name of it. It comes from Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's in the green glass bottle. Not Music Mountain. How come I can't think of it? Okay. My mind just played a trick on me. Sorry. But it's in a green glass bottle. They sell it for $1.50. But it is absolutely the most delicious water I've ever had. And it's tested to be the most energetic and pure and just fabulous. It's fabulous water.
Fantastic. I will look for that.
Okay. There you go.
I so appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hope that helps. How come I can't think of the name of it? What is the name of it? That's horrible that I can't do that. Anyway, please forgive me. Dr. Morgan here. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Doctor. I know you don't have very much time left.
I do for you. I will run into all the scheduled programs just to answer your question.
Hallelujah. Okay. I just wanted to know, when you have been able to get your blood sugar under control, you're eating right, and et cetera, are you still considered a diabetic because you've been diagnosed?
No, you have reversed diabetes, and you just slam your fist on the desk of the doctor and say, "Hey, I'm not a diabetic anymore."
Okay, so that if like for insurance purposes, when they start asking all those questions...
Oh, no, that's a different ball of wax. Let's put it this way. You have never smoked 20 packs of cigarettes in your life. You don't chew two in tobacco. But if the doctor gets that in the notes and the insurance company gets a hold of it, you're going to be like a heavy, you're they're going to say, ma'am, we see here you have a heavy use of beech nut chewing tobacco, and you're going to say, no. Now, that's hard. No, that's very hard to get rid of once it's on the insurance form. But what's your angle on it, though?
Well, I just was wondering because I'm thinking of getting a long-term health care insurance because
you have to insist that your doctor write a note saying, at one time she had a very mild case of diabetes, but she no longer has any diabetes. She's completely free and clear. And see if they'll write a letter for you like that.
Okay, okay. All right, well, that answers my question. I appreciate it.
All right.
I love your program.
Well, you're so kind and sweet. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Hey, you can call back anytime you want. Yeah, that's a tough call. If you ever have a physician that writes down that you've had, and I'm just going to make up some stuff here. I'm not trying to make a joke here. They could write down that you have a club foot, major facial deformities, you've got two ears missing, you're bald on half your head, you've got a bad eye with cataracts. Even if you don't have those things, once they're incorporated into the medical record, it's just nearly impossible to get rid of them. And that's just been my experience from reading a lot of medical reports. Boy, that button just wouldn't push today. I tried hard. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Thanks for your persistence.
Yes. I know you've talked about the flu shot before. I work at one of the area hospitals, and they require employees to get flu shots.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about that? About why not to get it?
Well, yeah, just in brief, number one, the flu vaccine contains mercury and aluminum and other substances, and so when you inject that in the body, and I'm just looking at the research of Dr. Hugh Fundenberg back from 1998 when he was interviewed by Johns Hopkins Newsletter, which is very prestigious. If you're a medical doctor and you see the term Johns Hopkins, you think, oh my goodness, I better hear what they say. And so when he was interviewed, he said, okay, tell us the truth. What is the chance of a person developing Alzheimer's if they have 3 to 4 consecutive flu vaccines? He said, that's easy. 7 to 800% increase in the lifetime risk of developing Alzheimer's if you get a flu vaccine. So that's one point right there. Not the only point. It's just one of them. But you know what? Even if I didn't have any other ammunition or any other arrows in my quiver, wouldn't that be like a pretty significant, because you, what does that number mean? 800% increase in the risk of, that's not 0.8%, sister, that's 800%.
Right.
And
okay.
So that would be one point. Now, to try to give you some confidence, it's not like the hospital gave you a choice, right?
No, they don't give you a choice. You either get it. Doctor's excuse, or you don't work there.
Okay, but they haven't said, can you go see Dr. Morgan because he knows more about this than what we do, and whatever he tells you, we'll just let him write a letter and that'll cover the flu shot.
And yeah, if you have a doctor's excuse, you don't
have to. I had one lady recently, and I thought, well, times are changing, but this is what happened. They insisted in the hospital that she get a flu shot. And she said, what if my doctor says different? And they go, okay. And so I wrote a little note, and I said, I'm requesting that she not take the flu shot because I feel like it'll harm her. Now, she also did have trouble with lungs and asthma, just to be fair here. But they completely let me write down that she could take the homeopathic version of the flu shot. And I said, this is the homeopathic vaccine, and there's a product called Flu Max Pro. And they completely allowed that, and I thought, oh wow.
So I gave her
a vaccine, just not the one that causes Alzheimer's.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay. If I come to you, you'll give me the flu.
That I can do, but I can't guarantee the hospital that you work at will allow it.
Right.
What hospital do you work at?
Oh, I'd rather not say.
Oh, okay. let me guess. It's Memorial Methodist Pentecostal Children's Hospital in Dallas, right?
No.
Oh, okay. No, I'm joking with you. No, thank you for your phone call, though.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, I just ran over. Please forgive me. You're listening to Health Essentials, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.